Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, Text Number 30. Dehi Nityam Avadyoyam Dehe Savasya Bharata Tasmat Sarvani Bhutani Natvam Sochitum Arhasi Dehi, the owner of the material body, Nityam, eternally, Avadya, cannot be killed, Ayam, this soul, Dehe, in the body, Sarvasya, of everyone, Bharata, O descendant of Bharata, Tasmat, therefore, Sarvani, all, Bhutani, living entities that are born, Na, never, Tvam, you, Sochitum, to lament, Arhasi, deserve. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O descendant of Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore you need not grieve for any living being. Purport. The Lord now concludes this the chapter of instruction on the immutable spirit soul. In describing the immortal soul in various ways, Lord Krishna establishes that the soul is immortal and the body is temporary. Therefore, Arjuna as a Kshatriya should not abandon his duty out of fear that his grandfather and teacher, Bhijma and Drona, will die in the battle. On the authority of Sri Krishna, one has to believe that there is a soul different from the material body, not that there is no such thing as a soul, or that the living symptoms develop at a certain stage of material maturity, resulting from the interaction of chemicals. Although the soul is immortal, violence is not encouraged, for the time of war is not discouraged when there is actual need for it. That need must be justified in terms of the sanction of the Lord and not capriciously. Dehi nitya vadyo yam dehe sarvasya bharata tasmat sarvani bhutani natvam sochitim arasi. O descendant Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain, therefore you need not grieve for any living being. Krishna has concluded in the summary the explanation not only we're not this body, but what is relevant to Arjuna's position. In other words, in this material world is a world of not only fear, but also lamentation. The very things that we fear always come about, practically speaking. So it's not that the fear helps us, even in the material world. Of course, we should have a certain amount of fear that's healthy. For instance, out of fear, we look both ways before we cross the street, hopefully. So that's a healthy fear. Not that I have no fear whatsoever, and on a crowded highway with my eyes closed, I just run through the highway. That's not a very healthy fearlessness. Or that I have no fear, so I jump into a volcano. No fear. No one should know what's to be feared and what's not to be feared. That requires intelligence. What is real and what's not real. In any case, Krishna has explained to Arjuna in different ways how the soul is eternal, but the body is temporary. Therefore, in one sense, there's no need to lament because no one is actually, nothing is really happening to anyone in the material world. Although it may appear externally that people are gaining or losing, but ultimately, it's the same thing as gaining in a dream or losing in a dream. It has no real ultimate reality to it. But the ultimate benediction is to realize who we actually are. Everything else is shravam eva hi kevalam. But in the course of realizing who we are, there's also progressions that it says in the Bhagavatam that the mode of passion is better than the mode of ignorance, the mode of goodness is better than the mode of passion, and better than all of them is transcendence, and better than transcendence is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, those who have the opportunity to perform devotional service, and they're the most fortunate. And those who perform devotional service with the objective of self-realization, they're even more fortunate. And those who perform devotional service with the idea of developing Krishna prema, they're the topmost fortunate. So Arjuna, he has been explained by Krishna the eternality of the self in order to encourage Arjuna to fight. But of course Krishna's objective in having Arjuna fight is not just to have him fight, but to reestablish Yudhisthira Maharaj as the head of the world so that people could progress towards Krishna consciousness. The fighting was not just an external event with no consciousness behind it. The whole idea was to distribute Krishna consciousness to others. That unless the leader is Krishna conscious, it is extremely difficult for the followers to become Krishna conscious. That everyone has to choose a leader, and because in the kingdom, Duryodhana is the leader, therefore, although they were prosperous materially, because even Duryodhana followed the Veda culture at that time, but spiritually they were going the wrong direction because the example of the leader was inappropriate. And therefore Krishna wanted the war in order to establish a actual bona fide spiritual leader in Yudhisthira Maharaj. So Arjuna, in the course of that battle, had to kill his grandfather and his teacher, and that would seem lamentable, but actually no one lost anything. Because his grandfather went back, actually. The reality is that his grandfather was one of the demigods originally. What kind of demigod was he? He came from a group of demigods who were accursed because they had offended a sage and they were cursed to die, take birth in the material world. And they got the benediction that if their mother Ganges, threw them into the Ganges, then the Vasus, eight Vasus, and that only one of the Vasus, Bhishma, had to stay on the earth. So when Santanu saw that Ganga was going to throw the last son into the Ganges and drown him, he objected, and then Ganga Devi disappeared, and Santanu raised Bhishma Dev. But being on this earth planet is not an award. Compared to being the heavenly planets, it's quite a struggle here. Although even the worm doesn't want to die. He protests if someone comes and attacks him. Even if he was going to become a demigod in his next lifetime, he'd protest. So similarly, the idea of anyone dying is inconvenient, leaving this body, due to illusion. But anyhow, Bhijma went back as one of the eight Vasus, which is certainly a superior position than living on this earth planet, even during Dwarpa Yuga. And similarly with Dronacharya, he undoubtedly got a more exalted position because he died in a noble war. Actually, he gave up his body, self. He went into trance, gave up his body, and left a yoga mystic power. So he undoubtedly attained a higher designation. So everything was auspicious about the battlefield Kurukshetra. Says that everyone who died there, they went either to the sun planet, or those who were fortunate enough to actually, even many, some of them went to back to Vaikuntha. So it was all auspicious, although it seems inauspicious, and some people will lament, but actually there was nothing lamentable because everyone got some benefit from the battle. Because nowadays when they have a battle, there is nothing glorious about the battle, because it's just fought by demoniac people with demoniac objectives. At least we can say there's no spiritual reason for the war. They're not trying to put anyone of a higher consciousness in power. The people with the lowest consciousness are in power. And the people who are fighting, they're thinking they're fighting for something like freedom or with glory. But actually, there is no freedom. They're completely controlled by their senses and their minds. And therefore, they're just fighting for nothing, for no value. And therefore, when they get killed in the battlefield, there's no real gain. Except they get another body, but not necessarily in a human form. Therefore, the idea is that Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita that if you're going to fight, you're going to do anything, you should do it in higher consciousness, and then you'll be benefited. It's not just what you do, or how you do it, it's why you do it, what kind of consciousness you have. And without understanding the eternality of the soul and his relation with the super soul and the objective of going back to the supreme soul, then whatever we're doing is a waste of time. Unless it just helps us, for instance, come closer to the mode of goodness so that we can understand that's the objective of life. To realize ourselves, to realize the super soul, and to realize the supreme person. The mode of goodness allows us to understand that, if not to partially realize it, and then one will become fixed in the path of transcendence. But in the mode of ignorance and passion, we don't really understand what the objective is many times. We just do things for the sake of doing them, unconsciously. And therefore, we may derive some benefit, but not as much as we derive if we did things in full consciousness, or more consciousness. So now Krishna has ended his talk about we're not the body, and now he'll talk about duty. People cannot really do their duty clearly unless they understand what the reason for the duty is. So the reason for duty is to come to knowledge. To do things dutifully means we're not hankering, lamenting. We're doing it simply out of duty. And therefore we become receptive to more knowledge. We can actually hear without some kind of attachment or aversion, and therefore we can understand more clearly. When we do things dutifully, we can come to the platform of understanding. We can gain actual knowledge. So in the second chapter, Krishna is starting with something about a little bit of knowledge, which leads to duty. The duty can lead to actual Krishna consciousness while we're doing our work, and the Krishna consciousness while we're doing our work leads to perfection, that we're able to give up all unwanted things, like Vihaya Kamiyak Sarvam Pumam Sarati Nispriha Nirmamo Nirhankara Sishanti Madhugachiti. Person who gives up all sense of propriety, gives up all desires of sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who is devoid of all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he can attain real peace. So, if we understand a little bit, we're eternal, the objective, and therefore we can do our duty with confidence and fearlessly, then we can come to the platform where we're able to work, and at the same time have a higher consciousness. And the result of that is that we're able to discriminate between what's good, what's what we need and what we don't need. And therefore, the flow of desires within our mind doesn't bother us because we're not attached to them. And then we can think about Krishna without disturbance. Esha brahmasthiti parata nanyam prapivumyati sthitvasyam antikalepi brahmanirvana richite. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is never bewildered. Being so situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So if we practice doing things dutifully, what Krishna wants us to do, and then based upon our understanding that the objective is to become Krishna conscious, so we realize we're eternal, we understand things properly, and we become free from anxiety, and we become happy and blissful in Krishna consciousness. So if we do that, then we don't get caught up in this cycle of hankering, lamenting, and we're able to give up material conceptions of life. Our minds becomes, we're able to think about Krishna and not become disturbed, agitated when different thoughts go through our mind. We don't become distracted. And then the result is that when we practice, that even the most disturbing thoughts, the disturbing experiences we have, which is at the time of death, we've become so practiced in becoming detached from disturbances that even at the time of death we can think about Krishna and not get agitated by our material circumstances. Then we become eligible to go back to the kingdom of God. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
I'm thinking about the desire. So if in our mind we have so many desires flowing, and they are not related to Krishna consciousness, so the solution could be that we can just avoid them because it has nothing to do with spiritual life. So is it that we just avoid them and not pay attention and just keep going?
That won't work. No. No, we have to think about Krishna. And if we're thinking about Krishna, then if something pops into our mind, we can ignore it. Because we rather thinking about Krishna is much more pleasant. And thinking about Krishna illuminates our consciousness that we can see what's actually valuable and what's not valuable. If we're actually experiencing happiness, thinking about Krishna and seeing things in Krishna consciousness, then if something pops in and says, why don't you go to the ice cream parlor? It doesn't seem like it's so important at that time. But if we're not thinking about Krishna, anything will seem important to us. Then our mind says, go to sleep. Oh, why don't you find something to eat? Why don't you look at the magazine? Go on the internet. But if we're actually reading about, like I'm reading about the Ramayana and the war and all the different generals that are coming in, Hanuman and Vivida and Sugriva and everyone else, exciting personalities, then I'm usually a few minutes late for poor Arti because it's hard to put it down. I lose the track of time. Could you imagine if you were fighting on the monkey army and someone says, hey, they're serving pizza over there? You probably become too absorbed in what you're doing to worry about whether they're serving pizza tonight or not. You have 5 million Rakshasa soldiers trying to kill you, Anything else? Well, Granth Rishi, my Bhagavad Gita, ki jai.